Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you might go friggin' nuts. It's the show that's so hilarious that you might William Shatner your pants. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism. I just came up with that today, you know, William Shatner your pants. I thought it was brilliant.
I hope I don't Shatner my pants throughout the show.
Yeah. You might get a Golden Globe.
Oh, right, because I'm looking for that.
Yeah.
I might actually beat that Israeli propaganda film, Argo.
Right. Well, anyway, what's on the news agenda for today, Suzanne?
Oh, boy. Well, we've got these school safety initiatives in all these schools here in the United States. I was going to say the UK.
Well, Suzanne, as soon as somebody mentions the word safety in a sentence, it scares the hell out of me right away.
Oh, you should be. But don't Shatner yourself. It'll be okay. In Arizona, the House Public Safety, Military, and Regulatory Affairs Committee has introduced HB 2555, which mandates that teachers, teachers' aides, professionals, and certain healthcare professionals can report, quote, potentially dangerous students to the police if they believe that the student is a threat to themselves or others. This
so
is some fun stuff.
This is like, what, the end of school discipline or something?
Oh, this is school discipline to a whole new level. You know where they used to paddle you? Now,
have you ever seen the movie The Class of 1999, where they got killer robots to be the teachers for the students?
No, I missed that one.
Yeah, it's a pretty lame film, but it's very interesting. Anyway.
That's probably what's... Well, over in Japan, they have robots teaching students.
Really?
Yes, they really do.
What, are they walking, talking robots? Like, Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto Teacher?
Well, they look like humans. They have this skin that looks human-like, and they have, you know, the cameras for eyes and everything, and they're able to speak. I don't think that they're completely autonomous. But they are teaching, I think, in elementary school.
Okay. Well, that's... if the merger of man and machine doesn't occur earlier. Well, anyway, continue with these safety programs.
And this is interesting because the House Representative John Kavanaugh is sponsoring this bill. And he swears up and down that nobody's going to get arrested. We just want to know about these potentially mentally ill children who might fall through the cracks. He doesn't mention the fact that Ritalin and all these other pharmaceuticals that they mandate these kids be on create violent or homicidal or suicidal tendencies.
It sounds like some kind of a Batman supervillain like the Ritalin.
It's terrible stuff. And they give it to children in near adult doses. And the other thing is, they're not quite sure in long-term studies what the actual effects are. And I'll give you an example. The woman who drowned her five children, Susan Smith, a couple of years ago, she was on a pharmaceutical antidepressant psychotropic drug. And after she killed her children, then they put on the label, may cause homicidal incidents.
Well, what I heard is that those drugs sometimes make you act out your nightmares in real time. And before that incident where she drowned five of her children, she'd been having recurring nightmares that her children were drowning.
She also believed that Satan had taken over her and that the only way she could save her children was to kill them and that she was possessed by Satan and the only way to save herself was to kill her. So she was asking for them to, you know, put her on the death penalty.
And they call marijuana the devil's drug.
Exactly. Well, there was an incident a couple years ago, I think it was in 2010, a 9-year-old boy who was under the care of his grandparents. He was disciplined by his grandfather that afternoon and that evening. Of course, he was on a psychotropic drug, and he shot both of them in the face while they were sleeping and then burned down the house. Never had a prior incident of violence before.
Yeah, they have this kind of instance happen all the time, and now it's what was it? Suicide is the number one cause of death in America, and you know, so many of those people that are killing themselves are on these psychotropics or SSRIs or serotonin reuptake inhibitors, I believe is the proper terminology. And of course, what are the government really freaked out about, and what are they charging at people with guns with? That's right, you guessed it, people that are trying to supply raw milk.
Oh, exactly. No, you can't have raw milk. You can't possibly have all the nutrients. They're introducing aspartame into milk
now. When was the last time you picked up a freaking carton and it says, warning, side effects may include homicide or suicide?
If I ever did, I would put that down immediately and not ingest it.
I mean, you know, I could just envisage some kind of a school milk program, you know, just like, give this to the kiddies, yeah.
Oh, probably, you know, probably.
Probably be part of this new school safety program.
So this school safety program that they're putting through all these schools, they have the SAFE system, which is a monitoring system that they're putting in Georgia public schools to protect the teachers and the authorities. And it's a network that provides a live feed from the site and monitors through stations so that first responders can act accordingly. And it has real-time information, which is accessible across the internet, delivered on computers, laptops, smartphones, tablet devices, to prevent all of these critical instances that may occur.
Why don't they just arm the teachers?
No. See, Wayne LaPierre from the NRA suggested that, and that's just crazy. However, the Obama administration is giving grant money to schools to hire private security firms to securitize the schools.
Will they be armed?
Yes, they will be, but armed in a way that the general public is not allowed to be. With assault weapons and high capacity magazines, things like that.
Right. So just in case you need to have a school massacre, you've got it on tap.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Well, let me just see if I've got this right. Teachers who prevent mass shootings by shooting the assailant because they've got a concealed carry, bad. Massive slaughter on students by other students who ignore gun ban rules and kill a whole bunch of disarmed people. Very bad. Massive thug-like police state measures with turning schools into prisons and having guards with semi-automatic weapons around. That's good.
Yes. Because we want to facilitate education instead of a peaceful place where these children can be indoctrinated.
Do they have like a postgraduate study where, you know, you graduate from school and then you go to prison to study how it's really like to be a proper prisoner?
You know, there was a study that was done in the 70s. This gentleman decided to take average people and put them in prison. And the study was supposed to be for, I think, a couple of months, maybe even 6 months. It only lasted 2 weeks. They split up the people into guards and prisoners. And immediately the guards became sadistic and became torturing the people who were prisoners. And people had to leave. People had to be escorted out. There were huge, massive uprisings. People behaved in ways that they never would have behaved before, and they ended it after 2 weeks because they realized it was dangerous to even conduct the study.
Well, I think if we were to put that into it, well, hold on a second. Why after that study did they not go, hey, hold on a second, just normal prison environment turns the guards into sadistic, psychopathic scum? Maybe it's not such a good idea to be incarcerating like half the population of the United States.
I agree with you, but then most of our prisons are privatized, and that's a huge profit margin, and we don't want to take money out of their coffers.
I think that if they are getting money into their coffers for turning people into sadistic psychopaths, doesn't that go against their mandate of taking sadistic psychopaths out of the general population?
Normal logic would dictate that, but I'm sure there's some sort of spin that, that makes normal logic throw out the window.
You just can't make this stuff up. It's fucking irritating. Hey, well, luckily we're talking about bad news today. I mean, if we were talking about good news today, everybody would just switch off. And I was like, oh, I can't handle this.
Right, no.
Holy cow. I mean, is it not obvious to everybody that the world is run by criminal sociopathic scumbaggery? I mean, you can't look into anything without seeing the symptomology there.
I know. I wish I could write a happy story. I'm told all the time by, you know, some of my family members, why don't you write something positive? Give me something positive to write about.
Yeah. You know, and another person said today, you know, you got to talk about solutions solutions. Right. There's a huge quantity of criminal sociopathic scumbags running everything, and somebody wants me and or you or other people in the media to come up with the solutions. Hello, that's not our job here. Our job is to show you what the problems are. You're the public. You're the ones who now have the information which we've provided for you. Go out and solve said problem. Our problem is trying to get the information out. Your problem is the ones suffering under the massive system that we're talking about here. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, the
role of the media has never been to provide the solutions. It's meant to more clearly define the problems.
Well, that's symptomatic of this idea that we've been conditioned to only go by what people tell us, and therefore we don't even understand how to fix our problems anymore. You know, if you have any issue, it must be psychological, and you go to a psychiatrist and they put you on drugs, and your problems are solved. If you have any social problems, then you go to some website and you get some dates, and there your problem's solved. If you have other problems, you watch TV and you go buy some stuff, and your problem's solved. But the problem is that the problem is still there. You're just masking it. All the solutions that have been put forth to us are just Band-Aids. And we still have the same problem. We're still depressed. We're still upset. We still don't perform to our potentiality. And nothing ever changes.
Well, you know, apparently men can take certain pills in order to improve their performance. But
but if it lasts for 4 hours, you might want to go to a hospital.
Yeah, it's true. Look, I also was thinking about this morning, is that people have got this hero complex, and they expect somebody else to solve their problems. And as you're saying, you know, if you feel that you're going a little bit nuts or whatever, and you go to a psychiatrist and they give you a pill, you know, are there actually people out there who still really believe that there's a pill for every ill? And more yes. to the point, where is the advent of therapy in all of this? Because as far as I know, most of my emotional problems or psychological difficulties and things of that nature have been resolved through talking, expressing, and understanding what is actually really going on, and then that's its own solution itself. Is not, you know, being frustrated and wanting somebody to distract you from these problems that you've got, but actually really talking about them and then coming to understand them. And once you reach that level of understanding, the problem seems to disappear and dissipate.
Yeah, it's called vetting. You know, or venting. I'm sorry, not vetting. It's called venting. Women do it all the time. That's what we have our friends for. I call up a friend of mine and I talk to her for a couple of hours and I feel better.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there really is nothing wrong with that, provided you're a woman and you're venting to another woman. What I've found is very interesting is some of my mates, you know, their missus will come home and she doesn't have any friends, so she vents at him. Men don't like listening to venting a lot of the time.
No, they don't.
we're just not wired that way. You know, we're solutions oriented. Venting is not kind of our thing. It's just like, well, the first thing a man does is going, well, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to solve this problem? You know, we're problem solvers. We don't recognize the whole need to just vent and get it out and things like that.
Oh yeah, my husband. Yeah, because if I bring a problem to him, he offers a solution, and he doesn't understand that I just want to talk about it. I'll deal with it later. Right now, I just want to talk about it.
See, and the men don't understand why the women just want to talk about it and not solve it.
Because it's on to the next thing for guys, right? Okay,
yeah.
There's a problem. I solved it. Now what's next? I got my toolbox. Yeah. What can we fix?
I mean, men are the social Illuminati. We see a problem, we have a reaction, then we propose a solution.
That is true. I see that. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. Now, incidentally, I think this is why men predominantly wind up being in politics and being the top of major corporations and things like that. Because when they come up with this country's got this problem and that problem, the men go out and we're going to solve it. We're going to destroy those bad terrorists or whatever. And then the women will just go, we just need to vent and talk about it for a long, long time. And so naturally, the world gets a hell of a lot worse because people are trying to solve problems that they can't solve because they're men and they're stupid. instead of just venting like they should. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, that's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that is done while wearing business socks. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel, and we want to take some callers now. I know I don't take callers very often, and I'm very sorry. I just normally, have new guests on and stuff like that and whatever, but we'd like to hear from the listeners now. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. You want to get on air with myself, Vinnie Eastwood, and Suzanne Posel of Occupy Corporatism. Speaking of Occupy Corporatism, I was talking yesterday, with, what the hell is his name? Bruce Montalvo in Los Angeles, and we got to chatting on his show, and he was bringing up all these articles from Occupy Corporatism. And,
wow.
Yeah.
I'm famous.
Yeah, very famous. Famous indeed. And I was just quite taken aback and also quite pleasantly surprised that he was doing that. So, yeah, Suzanne Posel, everybody loves her. She's so nice. She's so friendly. She got the cackle. See this? See, there it is. All right, come on, callers, where the hell are you? 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. We'd really love to hear from you today. And also in the second hour, James Wright from Occupy Freemasonry is going to be coming on the show, telling us about how his life has been going. It's been rather scary as heck, indeed. There's a recent assassination that's happened in the UK that he's going to be talking about. Some person who actually appointed him as his successor in terms of diplomatic documents and things of that nature has just been killed, and there is no media attention on it. He was also locked up in a mental institution and what have you, been forced to watch Christina Aguilera Disney movies and strapped to a chair, forced to watch Sesame Street. If anything is going to make you go nuts, do not go to a mental institution under any circumstances. Anyone there by choice, OK? Okay. The New World Order, Freemasonry, Illuminati, scumbaggery, whatever you want to call it, we're trying to get him, permanently disabled, you know, psychologically, physically, that kind of thing. It's a really terrible thing. So he's going to be coming on in the second hour, that's assuming he isn't assassinated first. Now, we've gone over the school security. It was very interesting how that first segment went, wasn't it, Suzanne? We went over from school security to how our schools are actually really prisons and how men and women just don't really listen to each other. Now, I don't know where to take this from here.
I've got a good article that we can talk about.
Sure.
The VA writes letters to U.S. veterans, Second Amendment rights revoked per 2013 NDAA. That went up over the weekend, and it went viral, so check it out. The Michael Connelly, the executive director of the United States Foundation, received U.S. veterans letters from U.S. veterans from the VA, telling them that a determination of incompetency will prohibit you from purchasing, possessing, receiving, transporting a firearm or ammunition. And if you knowingly violate these prohibitions, you will be fined, imprisoned in pursuit of the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. And now I talked about this because what a lot of people don't realize is when Obama signed the 2013 fiscal year National Defense's Authorization Act, the NDAA, there was a little provision in there. There was a little amendment championed by Senator Tom Coburn, which would deem veterans mentally incompetent. And now the VA and the Department of Defense, who is overseeing the VA, is now saying that these people, it was okay for them to shoot guns when they were serving. But now that they're veterans, because they maybe got hit in the head too much, they have TBI, maybe because they were encouraged to say they had post-traumatic stress disorder, which is something that a lot of veterans are being encouraged to say on paper. Go ahead and sign off that you have PTSD, and then you are mentally incompetent and you can't own a gun anymore.
Right. You know, this this reminds me of the Bill Hicks sketch about gays in the military. He says, anybody dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed in. I don't care how many push-ups you can do. Put on a helmet, go sit in that foxhole, we'll tell you when we need you to kill somebody. You know, where the military get off, and, oh boy, we are the military. Is that a village of children and kids? Where's the napalm?
Well, now the problem is
kind of moral justification. Let me continue on. I'm not going to continue on with the Hicks thing, but here's the problem. Veterans have seen war, okay? Grunts who have not even so much as fired a gun at a live target have no idea what it's like. No freaking idea. They still believe that their government is, looking out for the best interests of the people. When, on the other hand, you are in combat situations where you are killing women and children, you have a massive psychological test that comes on you. That test is basically, do you actually care that you're doing this to people, or do you not? If you don't, you usually go back into service. You know, you keep killing. But if you do care, you get really badly traumatized. You come home and you don't want to go back. And then the Department of Defense puts a blank mark on your record saying that you're a pedophile or a thief or a liar or some BS that they make up, which is put in these little employment codes, I think, which employers are allowed to look at. And so Basically you find out if you're a veteran with a conscience and you come back, you can't get a freaking normal job pumping gas after you've been trained to use million-dollar pieces of equipment and drive around tanks and fly helicopters and things like that. And apparently you're not good enough to pump somebody's 91 unleaded. So that's what's happening here. No wonder all the veterans are being discriminated against. Who do you think are the most likely people to help a revolution or something of that nature in terms of the local indigenous population of the country, who will militarily school them and lead them in a military campaign against their oppressors, namely the government. It'd be the veterans, wouldn't it? Because they know the very reasons why you don't want war. They'd know the very reasons of the trauma that gets suffered from it.
Right, and they would be the first line of defense. They were trained in tactical operations, so when the military shows up on your streets, they would be able to combat anything that happened. Absolutely, they want to get rid of these guys.
Yep, they do a whole lot of different things. And traditionally, that's what happens, really. Returning veterans are the scariest thing for a government because they know how they think, right? Absolutely. Just like a... what's this? Wasn't there some kind of a cop who went on a shooting spree and managed to kill another couple of cops just recently?
Yeah, that was Christopher Dorner.
Yeah. I keep mixing him up with Jeffrey Dahmer for some reason. so you know, if you've got somebody who knows your tactics and things like that, they're actually quite a big threat to you if they're not on your side anymore. You know. They can set up ambushes, and because they know how you'll operate and the methodologies by which you'll go into particular areas and things like that, they can set you up. They can booby trap. They can do all sorts of very, very nasty things that will quite likely have an enormous military effect in balancing the terms of the next engagement. And they don't want that at all. And by the way, there's been a lot of people talking about fear-mongering and people being encouraged to have violent revolutions in the street and things of that nature. That is the absolute last resort. Don't encourage it. Avoid it like the frickin' plague until you have no other choice. Once you're being fired upon... Okay, as an innocent person, I say frickin' return fire. Until then, no violence of any kind. Get the information out there, all right? The pamphleteers back before the Revolutionary War started were legend. People were like reading the pamphlet like 400 times or something. It's insane.
Well, that's the problem we have here in the alternative movement, and we talked about this on the phone last night, the infotainment industry of the alternative movement, it's all for show. And
didn't we want to start a new website, infotainment.com?
Yes, and maybe, you know, prominently display some of these people. And some of these people are calling for violence, and they think it's funny, they think it's cool, you know, but listeners are sometimes encouraged because of this bravado that and they're in these rock stars in the alternative media make themselves out to be bigger than they really are, and somebody might actually do something based on what they're listening to every single day.
Yeah. And again, I gotta say, until you've actually seen the violence, if you have seen war, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. Veterans do. That's why a lot of them don't go frickin' back, because they never want to see it again. And you think all of a sudden that they're going to be hungering for war in their homeland amongst their homes and their family and their friends and stuff? Hell no.
No, and we've got an executive order that was signed last year by Obama. The executive order is improving access to mental health services for veterans, service members, and military families, where he outlines that these veterans that are deemed mentally incompetent now have to go to these pre-approved from the DOD existing mental health services and substance abuse prevention programs, education and outreach programs that are approved by the DOD. And then they have like these psychiatric parole officers where they have to check in once a week or once a month just to make sure that they're still sane.
Mm.
Take their drugs, you know, that they've been prescribed.
See, that's interesting. What percentage of military personnel are currently on psychotropic drugs?
I don't know. I would assume that it's quite high. I know a lot of veterans who are encouraged to say as they're leaving that they have some form of mental deficiency because of their experience in combat, mostly post-traumatic stress disorder. That's like the big catch-all. And so then they can receive all of these benefits. So they're encouraged to say that. But like you said, once they do that, it gets filed away, and now they're using it against them. Oh, well, you're crazy. You know, you could snap at any moment. You've got PTSD.
Hmm. Okay. I don't like the whole idea of labeling somebody. Okay, an individual's an individual, and they're complex organisms, right? So they've got a whole bunch of things that they will do, a whole bunch of things that they won't do, and you won't know until they do it. So to label somebody as post-traumatic stress disorder, who made up that term, by the way?
I don't know, but whoever did should be hit over the head so he has TBI.
I think that's a little OTT. it used to be called shell shock.
Yes.
Back in the day. And I'm sure it was probably called something before then, before the use of shells. It's just war. It's conflict. People don't deal with it very, very well. It changes people. Okay? It has damaging, long-lasting effects on the psyche, on the consciousness, and so on and so forth. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You can't go and be trained. I'm an Air Force brat, so my father was in the Air Force for a very long time. And when you go through boot camp and you're trained, and then you're trained to be in combat situations, and you do what you feel is right for your country, you're doing things that you wouldn't normally do in everyday life. And then when you're released, you're spit back out to regular civilian society as if nothing ever happened. And the problem is that, yes, they do need help, and they do need mental health care, and they do need some deep decompression time in order to go from that to normal life. But they're not given that. They're given this label, they're demonized, and now they're having their Second Amendment rights revoked because, like you said, they're going to be the first line of defense if martial law does get enacted in the United States.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking about this as well. Could you, as a government, let's say you had just cause to go to war, and there hasn't been one of those in quite some time, and yet war's been fought continuously since. If you had just cause to go to war, and then you have returning veterans, what about an adjustment program? Okay, you've been here, you've done that, and now we need to adjust you back into normal life. We want to show you that Vietnamese children are not a threat, so don't throw grenades at them in the street. You know, that kind of thing. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only Fukushima irradiated. Yeah, everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel. Next hour, we're going to have James Francis Wright, the most significant Freemason whistleblower in history, I think it's safe to say now, and his publisher, I've been made aware just by James that is listening in, and anybody who wants to purchase a copy of James Wright's book about the ritual and occult abuses of Freemasonry, of homosexuals and what have you, just go to newfalcon.com, as opposed to Millennium Falcon, newfalcon.com. And purchase his book. And if you mention this show, the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you will get it personally autographed. How about them apples? So newfalcon.com, Freemasonry and Ritual Occult Abuses by James Francis Wright. And you mention the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com on your purchase, you will get a signed copy of that. Now, what were we talking about before, over the break? Oh, yes. SpaghettiOs killed the radio star. Now, there's a whole lot of people out there who are prepping, okay? And there ain't nothing wrong with being prepared. Ain't nothing wrong with being prepared. However, I believe that there is something wrong with being absolutely freaked out that somebody's going to be busting through your door at any moment. okay? And also I see this happening in a lot of different radio shows. You'll have people call up and they will ask the radio show host or the guest or somebody with knowledge, when do you think this might happen? When do you think, you know, as if the timing frickin' matters. All right, I can assure you the timing, it does not matter. Simply having an awareness of something, like I'm operate under the assumption that at any moment, sure, a black uniform scumbaggery New Zealand police officer slash agent slash Freemason slash Illuminati Satanist child sacrificing blood drinking scum could come through my door at any minute and put a swizzle stick up my Japs eye. It could happen, but I'm not going to worry about it day after day after day after day, because that would make me afraid. That would make me paranoid. And you know what happens when you're afraid and paranoid? You stop doing things, which is precisely what they want you to do. Inaction is the most dangerous thing in this movement. You can beat these people so long as you do something, anything, against their agenda on a daily basis. Do anything at all. Just talking to other people about this and having them call you a conspiracy theorist and explaining to them that a conspiracy is two or more people coming together to cause harm on a group, on two or more other people, whatever, without that group of people knowing about it, which happens all the time, and that the term conspiracy theorist was popularized by Richard Milhouse Nixon. It's what he called Woodward and Bernstein over the Watergate affair before he was found out to be part of, that's right, a conspiracy. It's a demonizing term. If you just keep telling people the truth, don't go over the top, though, and get uber angry and fly into a rage like I am now. That's not a good idea. Because you just switch them off. You might click them on, but never mind. It depends on the mentality there. But still, stinging in the same BS day in, day out. You know, it's the same reason, Suzanne, why I don't read too many articles or watch too much video or listen to too much alternative media talk radio anymore. Namely, because I'm just doing a hell of a lot myself and I don't really have time for it. Secondly, it's because I don't even need to stay up to date with how messed up things are. You know, I know things are bad, worse than bad. Things are fracked in every single possible conceivable way. But if I knew, well, I already know, but if I was trying to get even more explicit detail about how messed up I am and how bad society is and how terrible things are going, I think I would lose traction and I would stop moving forward. I would stop moving at all. It's not a good thing.
It's very overwhelming. It is. When I write these articles, it is very overwhelming. What motivates me is that I want people to know how important this is, to understand that the safety in our schools goes back to DHS and how they put all of these initiatives together, and through grant programs, they're paying the schools to go ahead and lock down and villainize your children even farther. I want them to know that. I homeschool my son. There's another reason why I homeschool my son, because I don't want him to be involved in that. That's an action that we can take. Get your kid out of the friggin' school.
Yeah. Stop and turn off the friggin' television.
We don't even own one.
Yeah. I mean, this is something I've noticed with a lot of truthers as well, is that they're literally getting rid of the freaking TVs. Now, I'm not like that, though. I don't watch TV. I surveil enemy communications. You know what I'm saying?
That's an awesome way to put it.
Because they insert stuff all the time into television shows and the news and things like that. And I'm not freaking watching like six, 8 hours television a day like the average American does. Far from it. But still, I like to remain plugged in, and that's what I'm comfortable with and things like that, because I can see what's happening. I know what's happening. And the thing about subliminals is that if you realize that there's subliminals in it, they no longer work on you. If you are unaware of the subliminals, on the other hand, They can have a remarkable effect, more than you'd believe. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. You've got to keep your head about you, ladies and gentlemen, okay? Just because, look, I've got this saying, don't worry, it's just the end of the world. You know?
Yeah. As long as you're prepared. You know, like when I was saying on the break, I'm from Florida. Every year, for 6 months out of the year, we prepare for a hurricane, whether or not it comes. You got to have your batteries and your water and your food and whatnot. And if it doesn't come, at least you have all these provisions and you don't have to go shopping for a couple of months. You got all this food. So, you know, don't worry about it. If it happens, you'll deal with it. I've been through every category hurricane you can imagine, including Category 5, which completely devastated the whole area that I lived in. We had to move, several cities away, and it changed my entire life. But you know what? I dealt with it. And everything I owned fit into a little box, and that's fine. You learn to deal with it. So if you're going to be preparing for this, and if you're listening to people and reading articles and watching documentaries that are scaring the hell out of you, you can always turn it off.
Yeah. And I recommend doing that from time to time. Like I do that pretty much every weekend. I will turn off my computer and things like that. I won't talk conspiracy. I won't do any of this stuff because my brain needs a break from fear and destruction and stress and work. You know, and all of us do. But here's the problem. When you work in a slave job, as I know many of the listeners do, and just remember, when I call it a slave job, I'm not meaning, you know, that you're slave scum or anything like that. I'm just you know. It's really, really tough when you come home at the end of the day from doing something that you hate for people who don't respect you, and the only thing you've really got to come home to is fear and distress, okay?
Yes.
You know, you've got to find some kind of a way of relaxing and dealing with it, okay? It's all very well being informed, but if you're not informed enough to know how to balance your own life systems, then what good is the information?
Absolutely, and if it doesn't encourage you, inspire you to act, the information is being lost. We have a motto in our house that we tell our children all the time, now that you know better, you have an obligation to do better. So now that you know what's going on, what are you going to do about it?
What was it? You said something there. I got this old saying as well, because you can do that not only with the information and discern with it, but you're also going to do that with your social circles as well. I do not hang out with anybody who does not encourage me, inspire me, or enlighten me. Okay? I just don't do it. There's 7 freaking billion people on the planet. I don't have to do it. Even if I mean, what am I going to do? Run out of enlightening, encouraging people? It's not going to happen. It's not physically freaking possible to meet that many people. And even then, when you do meet so many of those people, you suddenly realize, oh my God, I'm surrounded by people who are really cool and really happy and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, this really scary information seems to vanish. You still know it all, and you can still discuss it all, but when you do discuss it, you're happy that you're being able to talk about it with somebody else who knows what the frack is going on, and you don't have to placate them and treat them like they're a child and try to explain incident by incident what is really going on to people. That can be really freaking irritating.
Yes. I'm interested personally in the nature of reality. That's why I had Max Egan on my show, and I want him back on, because perspective is so important. And if we understood, like I was telling him, whoever is looking out of these eyes is the same, whether I was 4 years old, now I'm 35, my body is changing, but I'm still the same. And that fascinates me. And because we have to understand what that phenomena is, then we can understand the nature of reality, and we can understand how powerful we really are.
Yeah. And I think that what's really missing in a lot of conspiracy talk radio is just talking about the nature of reality in and of itself. You know, I see so many people, it's just article after article, video after video, incidents of scumbaggery after incidents of scumbaggery. I mean, this is the reason for my theory of fractal scumbaggery. Like, with the fractal universe theory, you know, you'll zoom in on something and it'll start to replicate right underneath the microscope, and then you zoom into what replicated, and it starts to replicate again and again and again. Fractal scumbaggery is a very similar thing, where you look at an instance of scumbaggery and more scumbaggery comes to light, and then you look at that and more scumbaggery comes to light, and so on and so forth. It's an infinite circle. Don't get trapped on the merry-go-round. Suzanne Posel, thank you very much for coming on. We'll see you again sometime.
Yes.
Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave Fukushima-irradiated South Frickin' Pacific. My very special guest right now is coming at us from his new home in California. He made it, ladies and gentlemen, and no small thanks to you, the audience, as well, those of you who donated and things of that nature, is James Wright. And unfortunately, we've just had a little bit of a connectivity issue with his Skype there, and he seems to have dropped off. Don't know what's going on there. AFR, if you can hear me, could you please try and reconnect James, if that's at all possible? now, James, are you there? James, are you there? Can you hear me? Having a little bit of a problem with the audio there. James, please type in a phone number. And
hello.
We've got you. We've got you. Do you want to put in a phone number into the chat here, so that we can give you a call on that if your Skype drops out again? Okay, so we've got it there. All right. Well, there's been a hell of a lot of stuff that has gone down, my friend. And AFR, let's connect James up on that phone number that he's just popped into the chat there, because his connection seems to be dropping out quite consistently. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you know this, but I kind of have this this thing where the number 33 appears all the time, like all the time. I think one day I tried to take pictures of all these times that I saw number 33, and I think I may have managed to take about half a dozen in a day. And I think it occurred two or three other times during that day, but I wasn't able to take screenshots or take video pictures of it or anything. Okay, it's incidentally right now because I've got 33 unanswered messages on my Skype. All right, James, I believe we've got you on the phone now.
Yes, in a manner. I don't know what that was. Everything was fine right up until that very second you introduced me, and then the feed just stopped. And your face froze, and I have a full connection. So
yeah, it's really strange how that happens sometimes. But why don't you let people in on these conversations that you and I have been having behind the scenes, to do with the mental hospital and your trip to California and New Falcon books and all of that?
Yeah, so it's been my God, a rough last 2-3 weeks. And on one hand, I owe you a huge thanks just for, you know, helping get the word out and everything, which wouldn't have happened if I didn't remember those old 80s, you know, phone fracking techniques. Remember, like in the movie hackers were that he taps the receiver a certain way when he's in jail, and he's able to dial a different number than what he's supposed to dial. And that's what I had to do to call a childhood friend whom I trust to say where I was, what was going on, and to please get in touch with you. So, what happened was, I have to go back in the story a little bit in time so you'll understand why I ended up where I did. I have not spoken with my mother in 13 years. My mother is obviously a very high-profile member of this, you know, bloodline family that I come from and everything, and certainly was an avid ritualist back in her heyday. She's a very, well, I don't want to get into all of it, it's just a little bit too personal, but needless to say, she's not that nice of a person. We haven't spoken in 13 years. And then I found out back in December that she had been battling breast cancer. So naturally, as a human being that cares about the fate of people, you know, whether good or bad, I reached out to her, and we began speaking for the first time in 13 years. And I was really astonished because it seemed to me that battle with cancer, which she triumphed over, to her credit, I mean, she's a strong little woman, and so that's great, and she won the battle. I got the impression, even though I was suspicious, that, you know, it had spawned some sort of soul-searching, and that she was a changed woman for the better. And I had one of my old childhood friends call her up and speak to her as well, and she also concluded the same. I had two other childhood friends, though, that warned me, you know, run, don't walk, and I quote. And it turns out, I'm afraid, that they were correct. Even though we had some good conversations and everything, you know, the circumstances in my life were still rapidly deteriorating just in the Masons' pursuit of me and their harassment. I mean, it never ends. And so, I had described all of that to my mother in our conversations that we were having. She knew where I was, the ranch I was hiding out on down in South Texas, and, so forth. And even at one point made the suggestion that, you know, maybe perhaps she should come down and help move me back home to Dallas, which, you know, we pondered over, but nothing ever happened with it. In the meantime, I was back into a corner in many, many ways, one of which would be financially because of the ramifications of, you know, what I have done. And I told her, you know, I'm broke, I'm starving, I have nowhere to go, and then the friends I was staying with on the ranch I was on, they moved back to where they're from. So I was essentially made, you know, homeless. And I mean, it was just a comedy of errors that led to what happened. So I decided, okay, I don't want to freeze to death at night in my car, which I'm clearly going to be living out of. My mother was expressing no interest in bringing me back at this point, and I'm sure I know the reasons why. Incidentally, she was blaming, in the conversations we were having, all of the stuff with the Freemasons on my aunt, and where my aunt used to blame it all on her, and you know, it's just that sort of sickness that I've had another fresh lesson that I need to stay clear and far from. I'm down in, I go further south into Texas, onto Padre Island to be exact, and because I figure, you know, I won't freeze there at night, it just doesn't get that cold there. I'll have about a steady 80 degree temperature day and night, and you know, I'll at least be comfortable despite being homeless. And that lasted about a week before I was suffering from malnutrition and dehydration. So I was talking to a friend, and she said, call your mother. Reach out to her. Tell her what's going on. You know, don't hold back. Let her know the stark reality of the situation. So I did. And my mother responded by going on a vacation. That's just, you know, I have to laugh because that's who we're dealing with here. So anyway, I was advised, go check myself into the hospital where I was at and get treated for malnutrition, dehydration, and so forth, and massive anxiety, and so on. And so I did. I went to the nice hospital there in town. And all I remember is that night I went to sleep. They had all the little things hooked up to me, and they were, you know, feeding me and all this. And I went to sleep, and then the next morning I woke up in the back of an ambulance, and I knew I was under heavy sedation. I mean, I had been given something because I was, you know, effed up, and it was just very obvious, and it seemed like it was morning. I mean, the morning sun was out, so that's the only thing I have to go by, really, but I was in the back of an ambulance with two police, an EMT, and an attorney, very small female attorney, like a black or whatever. And, you know, I asked where I was and what was going on, and all they would say is, you're being transported to another facility. And I'm like, okay, so what, is there a shortage of beds? You know, what's going on? And this small woman who was the attorney then enters the conversation and hands me paperwork. This paperwork is, and I'm able to read. I may be under the influence of some sort of medication that they put in me, but I am able to read. And I read this because this woman is telling me to sign it. Well, I did not sign it because what it was a document my mother had drafted up where I would be signing over all of my power of attorney of book contracts, radio contracts, everything to do with the work I do, over to her. And this is a woman who has multiple times in her life made bad moral decisions at the behest of Freemasons, whether her own father or whomever, a boyfriend, so on. And I looked at this. It was basically the ability to be destroyed, signed here. And I tore it up into 1,000 pieces and threw it all over the ambulance. Well, that was not what they wanted. So I was punished for that. And I was taken to a facility that I can only best describe as a 1940s Russian gulag. It was a very old, decaying, mind control facility. Where in which I had all, I mean, I've never worn a pair of handcuffs, I've never been arrested, I'm good, you know, never done anything wrong, but this was pretty much what I would expect the experience to be like, and that's just how it started. Pardon me, I've been on the phone about all day, my voice is a little scratchy. Are you there, Vinny?
Yeah.
Okay. So, they took everything from me, all my possessions, my clothes. I had to put on, you know, a paper gown. And to make a long story short, an average day inside this place, you were fed disgusting gruel three times a day, had all kinds of psychotropic, you know, mind drugs experimented with on me, that which I could not hide or conceal in my mouth long enough to spit out later. And, you know, you were, even though I wasn't trying to do anything, I was trying to do what they wanted me to do so I could play the game and get out of there as quickly as possible. But, you know, I had to spend my days tied to chairs and watching in the mornings Sesame Street, which I found really bizarre. And then during the middle part of the day, we were actually kind of allowed to wonder. But if we started commingling or asking for a phone or anything, it was, you know, back to your straps for you. And then at night, there was either some sort of Disney movie that we were supposed to watch, or for whatever reason, again, Christina Aguilera music videos. Not sure why. And I tried my best to just grit my teeth, tune this all out, play their game, and get out as quickly as possible, which, of course, I did. After 5 days, they had to release me because the doctors had no reason to keep me. They were trying to say that I was being treated for and kept there for schizophrenia, but there is no diagnosis on paper. And anyone that thinks that I'm making this up, I mean, you can call the medical authorities and, well, no, the HIPAA, that'd be a HIPAA violation. But no, I can produce documentation, I'll put it that way instead, that I do not have any kind of diagnosis of schizophrenia. I do have bipolar disorder, I will admit, they found. For what that's worth, you know, we'll just take that with a grain of sand at face value. You know, that's a whole other story, a whole other debate. But anyway.
See, in my opinion, bipolar is like sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. It's called frickin' life.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that aside, whether I am or whatever, I'm just really not interested in the doctors there. And then there was, of course, no diagnosis of schizophrenia like they kept claiming I was there for, and treating me as such. And so I get out, and, you know, you had successfully got the message out, and I got enough assistance going to where I could actually afford to physically get myself to California. And my publisher, New Falcon, has been most gracious in providing me a lot of resources and safe haven and a very, very high amount of security. I must say I'm impressed with the security. You would have to come through 3 layers of gates and walls and such right in the middle of urban, active L.A. to even have the ability to knock on my door. So I do at least feel safe at the moment. That's fantastic. You know, I'm not out of the woods yet. I'm still broke. I'm still struggling. But I'm just taking it a day at a time and trying to not be too battered by what the people inside the net keep dishing out, and not just to me, but to others I know. And, you know, I got to L.A. very, very early yesterday morning and had a nap, woke up, and then more tragedy.
Well, let's talk about this tragedy after the break, ladies and gentlemen. It's a bit of a cliffhanger with even more intrigue and subterfuge with James Wright after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Get on the horn and tell people to tune into this broadcast right now. You're not going to want to miss this.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes where others fear to tread. And we've pretty much been everywhere, especially with my very special guest, James. Right now, in the UK, was it just this morning that you received the news or something? What are we talking about here?
Yesterday morning. And by the way, are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Okay. Yeah, I've been experiencing very anomalous communication and disruptions all day yesterday and today. So, yeah, I'm here. I just get in, have a nap, speak with my publisher, and I'm literally unpacking, and the phone rings, and it's the fiance of a very good friend of mine, and he's a bit of a controversial figure, but people out there listening can just take my word on it that he is a good man, a total scholar and very influential figure of our time. I highly suggest his works. His name is Nicholas de Vere. Some know him as Prince Nicholas de Vere. He's royal, he's Hungarian prince. He is the head of the Priory of Sion, and of course, owner of the Dragon Court. Yeah, we'd been friends for quite some time all throughout my tenure in Freemasonry. When the things that happened to me did, he was very sympathetic. He took my side. He was a very outspoken supporter of the work I'm trying to do, and you know, the reform I'm trying to push for, and everything else. And he sort of joined up with me, and we've had a lot of good times, and so on, and really made a lot of progress. And he, you know, opened doors for me at the European Union, which really allowed me to push for what I'm pushing for politically, globally, all that. And so, you know, I will always be very grateful to him. And the phone rings. I'm unpacking. It's his fiance. And they had just bought a second house. She had been there during the week, attending school, getting things, you know, I guess put where they wanted them and decorated and whatnot. And he had stayed behind at their old house on the west coast of Wales. And so she went home for the weekend. It was nighttime there and morning here for me. And when she got there, she found that he had been murdered. And when I say murdered, I mean overkill, a hit of the highest levels. Nicholas de Vere is dead. And there is a complete media blackout on this. And the police in the UK are acting extraordinarily stupid. I went to them, I contacted them with my diplomatic credentials that Nicholas supplied me with in the event of an emergency such as this, and said, you know, demanded to know what's going on, demanded to see the progress in their investigation, everything. And I was told that the way he was found and everything has one simple explanation, that he had a heart attack. Well, let me tell you how he was found. And if there are children listening, you might want to shoo them away for a moment. She found him naked. There were lacerations suggesting some sort of ritualized whatever. And it was very evident that he fought very hard for his life, because the whole room that he was in was destroyed, as in, like, the movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They go to kill each other, and really all they do is destroy the room in the process. Well, that's sort of what it looked like. I mean, it just demolition, complete destruction. And he put up a hard fight against his assailant, and he didn't win, and so he's dead. And all the war, he is the man responsible for the Freemasons recently having their rights to the Knight Templar material revoked. He is the man who is responsible for the call politically to have the Scottish Rite shut down globally, calling for all of Freemasonry to be reformed and complete transparency in it, just like I am. And that is all now finished. All our work, all of it, is now gone. And he is gone. And it's, I mean, I'm still in a state of shock. I have certain duties as cultural attaché that he appointed me as that I have to fulfill. I don't even know what to expect next. I don't know. I might have some phone calls from attorneys or politicians, or you know, I don't even know how much longer my .eu email address will be active. I mean, because he's gone, and the scope of our work is gone, and you know, the books that he wrote were that made him quite famous were are the Dragon Legacy and the Dragon Seed, CEDE, and they touched a lot of people's lives. He was like a father figure to so many of us from these corrupted, screwed up bloodline families. He himself is bloodline, but you know, he understands, and that's why he was a mentor to so many, and he will be greatly missed. And no one even knows about this because there's a complete media blackout on it. And the police are sitting there saying, oh, he had a heart attack. And in the process of this heart attack, destroyed every item virtually, plus walls, plus an entire room of his house while stripping naked, and evidently cutting himself. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's once again corruption within the House of Windsor and Freemasonry working hand in hand to do the most awful things. And I cannot believe that he had to depart this earth that way. I mean, it just kills me to think about it. I mean, he at least deserved the dignity of dying an old man, you know, peaceful in his bed, and he was denied that. He was assassinated in a very sadistic manner, Vinny, and I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know. I was on the phone with the FBI earlier, and you know, no one is addressing the issue, and this talk of heart attack has got me just furious, you know, because his fiance called me first. I got the information first, so I know what was going on there while the police were still there. And what they're saying now is, which they're not saying anything to the press, but what they're saying to us is complete BS, and knowing him as I did, he would be absolutely furious with it, and he'd be raising hell. So, you know, a lot of people are going to mourn this man and his passing, unnatural passing, because he had a lot of years left, a lot of things left that he wanted to do. We were working tirelessly to come up with political solutions, peaceful solutions to put an end to the current awful, awful ways of Freemasonry and their global dominance. And I don't even know what's coming tomorrow now, because he was my strongest supporter still within, you know, the a higher echelon environment. And so I'm sort of feeling like the lone wolf at the moment, you know? It's very difficult. So
yeah. Well, it occurs to me that within the UK and the police force, I think I just saw a documentary once that said that about maybe a third of sworn officers are also sworn Masons, who value their membership to Freemasonry above their membership to the to the police force. So these kind of cover-ups become almost certain that kind of a hand of Masonry involved.
Stories. You're absolutely right. He's told me plenty of stories over the years and about that. And if ever he had legal issues, he would deal with being a prince and a diplomat. You know, he had the luxury of being able to just deal direct with Interpol, but and he would, you know, accomplish some amazing results whenever he was threatened or had legal problems or what have you. So he knew not to trust the police, and he would be absolutely mortified at the way that this is all being handled. And, you know, the stark reality of it is that everyone that had associations with him closely is now in danger, and there's people that I still haven't even gotten around to calling yet. You know, this has been an ongoing thing all day long. I've had to recharge my phone 3 times just to make the phone calls I have, and it's got a long battery life. So, you know, that is crucial to say that if any of them are listening, I'm not talking about a lot of people here, but if you were associated with the work we were doing at the EU, then your life is now in danger because they got to him and he was an untouchable, so we thought. You know, he's the head of the frickin' Priory of Zion and he's been bumped off. But he's been very outspoken over the years. A lot of people know from his work against some of his family members, by which I mean the House of Windsor. So, you know, he was very taken aback by their actions over Diana and everything. He was one of the good ones. He was like the diamond in the rough of a very, very dysfunctional and sick family. You know, back to that subject of bloodlines, which he has written extensively about. He was the world's foremost expert on that because he was an insider willing to speak about it. And, you know, now he's gone. So,
what do you do? You know, and that's the kind of position I think you've kind of found yourself in, is that you've got these incredibly dangerous, evil people whose power is virtually limitless, and now they're threatening all the people that are, and all the work that's been done to expose and overthrow them, just like that. And nobody knows.
It's like 5 years of what we've worked on went up one puff of smoke in 1 second.
Well, see, at least on the bright side, we are talking about it on air now, so at the very least the listeners to this broadcast know about it. But I try to help people, especially in their time of need, James, and I hope that I have helped you with these last couple of weeks and months and whatnot that you've been on the run, and now you're at least somewhere safe.
You've become one of my closest friends. I mean, Vinny, you're the real deal, and I trust you more than I would trust, you know, this latest thing with my mother. I mean, it was such a personal and trying matter for me to be tackling again in my life that, you know, I've been able to weed out a couple more friends who were not really friends, who were serving other interests. And, you know, there's such a sickness right now in the world with all these lies and injustices and things being done, and, you know, they're losing this battle against us, the truthers / patriots of the world, but it's very slow. It's very painful, a very painful death for them. They're going out with absolute just marquis de Sade, sick, sadistic actions toward others, and they just need to be stopped. They need to stop. They need to be stopped. It's so far gone out of control. I mean, I feel relatively physically safe at the moment, but that's not to say that any one of the people walking down the street I'm on, which is a major thoroughfare here in Los Angeles, could be suspicious. You know, it's like that scene in The Matrix with the woman in the red dress. It's just anybody could be an agent right now is sort of the thing. So, you know, I'm behind secure, gated walls times three. You know, physically, I'm fine at the moment, but it's just this crazy now.
Well, you can't live your life under frickin' house arrest, can you?
No. I mean, I'm going out later to see a very dear friend, Lon Milo Duquette, who every time I see him, something extraordinarily good happens in my life. So I'm hoping, you know, that such will be the case again this
evening. Maybe you're due for some good news, James. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with James Wright at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in just a few minutes. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment here with James Francis Wright today. Maybe you can hear it in the background, but I now have a black helicopter hovering above my flat.
Really?
Yeah, really? But you know, we'll just let them have their fun, won't we? I don't know why, and it just freaks me out a little bit. The American Freedom Radio Board also, as you might have noticed before the break, we didn't hear the break music, and it jumped, like it delayed by about a minute or something like that. So we've got even less time to have on the radio now. And on top of that, your Skype was working perfectly, and then it just suddenly malfunctioned, having all these artificial drop-offs and stuff like that. And I'm reminded of what happened with the interview I did with Tila Tequila when she started to go public and coming out about the Illuminati on this show as well. Similar type of things.
Yes, I've heard that interview, and I really would like to reach out to her now that I'm in the L.A. area. Perhaps we could meet up or, you know, something. I would just like to compare war stories, if nothing else, because based on the interview I heard you conduct, I mean, the things that she said, there's no way for her to possibly know them unless she's telling the truth, because I've experienced very much so the same. She's just experienced it from an entertainment industry perspective, where I've experienced it from a, you know, aristocratic family perspective. And it's this subject matter especially, you know, one of the highest level political assassinations of our time has just been executed, and no one even knows. And I'm on the air discussing this, and now you have a black helicopter, and God only knows what's going on down there on the other side of all these gates where I am in L.A., so... you know, it's just, oh my God.
It's holy cow.
My Skype was working so good that we were actually going to do video for the first time in a while. And then right as you're introducing me, it just locks up. The computer's fine. The signal's cute. I'm in L.A. I'm getting the best signals on the earth.
See, it's fucking insane, and it occurs to me that as well that these people try to make you go nuts by making you question everything and be paranoid and suspicious and what have you. I don't give a frack that your Skype blocked that got dropped off. We got you on your phone instead. I don't give a frack that the video's not working. I'm going to take a couple of screenshots of the little bit of video that we did get of you, and I'm going to put them into the video. I don't care that there's a black helicopter hovering above me. He might be looking for something else, like people growing marijuana in their small basement apartments or something like that. I don't care. You know, I mean, so just so long as these fracks don't, you know, completely cut us off, and I don't have people with compass and square hammer and sickle type insignias on them, on their black hoods and garb and stuff like that, come in here and try and sacrifice me to some dark lord of the Sith or something like that, I don't care. But
well, if they'll sacrifice ritually one of the top guys in the world, you know, as far as rank goes, when you get into the subject of bloodline, everything that these people are into, right? They'll bump him off like that, which no one, my colleagues and I, ever thought would happen. But wonders never cease, right?
Yeah, I mean, it scares the heck out of you because I think me and Suzanne Poser were discussing before you came on the show is if you're keeping up to date with all the real bad stuff that's going on all around the place, you become really, really afraid and paranoid and it freaks you out. And you've got to find some way to de-stress and detach. But unfortunately, in cases such as yours, you're in it and there ain't no getting out.
Right, they've said themselves they still view me as property. They refer to me as property. I mean, I have this on tape. Masons calling from the Scottish Rite, ordering me here or there, you know, like I'm due on base. It's just, it's bizarre. And I ain't coming. In case they have not got the message yet, let me make this as crystal clear as I possibly can muster. I want nothing to do with any secretive order or society that operates underground in the dark and subscribes to blood oaths and bizarre practices with ritualized occultism and so forth. Any of you, you can all take a hike. We are not having dealings with each other in the future except me continuing to fight you and bring you down. The whole lot of you.
All of you freaking scum. And I know that these people tune into these shows and things like that. And you even have dupe masons, I call them, you know, signing into the chat room sometimes when you're on, calling you a fraud and what have you. And they have no idea what they're talking about under total mind control. And it's just, look, just think about this for a second. You're a mind control scumbag at best. And you're an evil satanic cultist at worst. What do you think is going to happen to you for the rest of your life? Do you think anything good, anything decent is going to turn out for you because you're trying to demonize and destroy people who are trying to expose you? You've got nothing. You're filth.
So it's just like JFK, and even that's been so misconstrued in the conspiracy tellings of the story. You know, we're led to believe that it's this and that in Cuba and Russia and blah, 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 and the Dallas Mafia. Give me a freaking break. What sealed his fate was when he made that famous speech in which he said, we need to do away with secret societies in 1961. In 63, he was dead. And who replaced him? LBJ, 32nd degree Freemason, a friend of my grandfather's, who not a nice man, and everybody listening back in Texas whose jaws are hitting the floor, they can just get over it. I don't care how many freeways are named after him in Texas. He had a lovely wife, Lady Bird. I feel sorry for the woman that had to be married to that thing. I mean, these are men, and this was in the 60s when they were, the Masons, that is, were truly, truly at the unbridled height of their power. You pick up the phone, brother, it's murder, it's whatever, it's done. Now they have to struggle a little bit more. But yeah, they are obviously still successful in some avenues because one of the most illustrious figures, you know, larger than life, Nicholas Devere, who was fighting them, you know, in my ring, is now slain. And, I mean, how do you think that makes me feel? I almost feel responsible for it. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, because of his association with my cause or whatever. I mean, this is reaching epic proportions.
Jay, you can't blame yourself, man. You both of you knew the risks going in. And you both know that the risk...
He predicted his own death. He said that he would be ritually killed in the manner he was, but he believed that would happen somewhere in America. Like if he was on a trip inside of America, it would happen, that what happened would happen here. he never thought that would happen in his own house in Wales.
See, look, I don't know what to say, James, and I don't think anybody anywhere would really know what to say to you, because this is your fight. You know it better than anybody else, and you've got so much strength just to be able to survive what you've already been through, let alone how bad things are going to get, and I believe they're probably going to get worse. Do you reckon so?
I don't want to indulge in pessimism, but, you know, yes, they probably will. Look at what's happened. I mean, Nick is dead, and there's, like, no justice. You know, I'd like some justice, please, and denied. So the FBI, of course, wanted to perform the Spanish Inquisition on everything. And you know what? I've turned over them all the links they need. All documents, everything to prove who wanted him dead, and the motive, and everything else, and are they listening to any of the cold, hard evidence that I have given them? No. So, you want to heal this thing, you want to fix it, all secret societies must be made illegal globally, and you kill it. Because, see, Freemasonry has always survived public outcry because they've changed their name. Oh, we're not that anymore, now we're this. Okay. No
but
more.
But they're still the same freaking thing. And, you know, I encourage people, you know, a global boycott, you know? You're going in business with anybody who's a high-level Freemason? No. You're going to vote for anybody who's a high...
Vinny. If they're a cop, if they're a judge, if they're a lawyer, if they're a financier, if they're anything, if they're the janitor, it's a conflict of interest because they subscribe to murderous oaths that supersede...
James, I'm sorry, we've run out of time. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.